What is up, guys? Welcome back to the Zach and Pat Show. I'm Zach.
I'm Pat.
This is the show about manhood, fatherhood, entrepreneurship, and the mentality it takes to be successful at those things. And we'll probably sprinkle in some helpful real estate advice, too, because that's what Pat and I do. You know, guys, life can be tough. We can go through some things and struggle at times, but the show to let you know that you're not alone. So if you're someone out there going through any of these things, this is the show for you.
Shout out to our friends over at Captain Beard Co. Guys, if you are looking for beard care products, shampoo, conditioner, body wash, give Captain Beard Co. a try. They have this unbelievable beard butter, balm, oils, and then it smells amazing. Ladies, if you're looking for something for your men as a gift to help with their grooming, check them out. Also, if you guys are looking to just set the mood one night, candles, unbelievably smelling candles made with all natural ingredients here locally to St. Louis. Give them a shot. Also, while you're there, use the promo code Zach and Pat for 10% off your purchase.
Hey there, guys. Really appreciate you checking out the Zach and Pat Show. If you can obviously tell, we are a newer podcast, but one way we're really trying to grow the show is trying to get up the amount of subscribers we have. So, you know, if you're watching the show and you're getting something out of it, we'd really appreciate it if you could click that subscribe button. That would help us out a ton. Please click that button. And now back to the show. We have a very special guest in studio today. She is another member of Punchline with a show of her own, Kira Anderson from Yes We Can.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks welcome for coming to the show.
On. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, there's a lot about myself. Okay. What do you want to know?
All of the things. Give our listeners a brief intro into who Kira is.
Okay. So first and foremost, I am a mother of three children. I have a 7-year-old, a 5-year-old, and a 4-year-old. I am a recent cancer widow. I hate to have to like tag that onto my initial introduction, but it's a big part of my life right now. It's recent. My husband passed away in 2023 from cancer. I am a health and wellness coach and also have a podcast, as you guys mentioned. And I also teach spin at True Fusion. So, yeah.
So how long have you been a health and wellness coach?
So I was in medical sales for 10 years. And then when I got married, I left my career and started getting certifications in health and wellness, you know, different certifications, studying nutrition. So it's, I would say I've been a health and wellness coach for maybe, I don't know, 5 or 6 years, but I've been in the industry for almost 10.
Okay. So are you always like someone who was always fit and working out like your whole life? Or are you an athlete growing up?
Yeah, as an athlete growing up. My favorite sport was basketball.
Okay.
Yeah, I hold some records. No big deal. Way back when. And I did track, volleyball, cross country. Loved it all. And then in my 20s, I ran marathons, half marathons, triathlons. I really got into long distance stuff.
Do you still do that stuff?
I don't. Once I started having children, I use it as an excuse to stop.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, obviously.
Did you enjoy the marathon running and all that?
Let's see. I enjoyed half marathons. Okay. The marathon was a challenge. I enjoyed my first marathon, but not so much the second, third, or fourth.
Mm-hmm. Why is that? Just because how time consuming it is training for it? Or?
Yeah, and I chose tough marathons. So the first marathon I ran was the LA marathon. And the second marathon I ran was Big Sur, because I lived in the Bay Area, and that's like super hilly. Like I wanted to die.
I figured all marathons would just be flat, no?
Oh, God, no.
No, okay.
No.
Not all marathons are the same.
No,
okay.
They are not.
We're not marathon runners.
Yeah. Well, now I can't.
Yeah.
I didn't know before.
Yeah.
But, and then I ran New York, and I did not like New York because you had to get up like super early in the morning, like 1 a.m. or something to like get on a ferry to go to the island. Yeah, no, it was unpleasant. Hmm. And then my final marathon was a St. Paul, it was a hilly marathon. What was it? I don't know. It was a hilly marathon in Minnesota. Not great.
That doesn't sound fun at all.
It wasn't. No. That was it.
Hills suck.
Yeah. No, like in the forest. Like it was like not good. Trail. It was a trail marathon.
Oh.
Yeah. So check, and I'm done.
Knocked it all out and
yeah.
See you later.
Exactly.
So what inspired you to become a health and wellness coach?
That's a good question. So I lived in Northern California. People were way more in tune with their bodies. People ate better and everyone exercised. And I just kind of fell in love with that lifestyle. And then I moved back to the Midwest.
Where we don't.
So I actually moved from Northern California back to where I'm from, Nebraska. And I was planning to open an indoor cycling studio. Like I was planning to put my life savings in and like devote my life to that. Ended up not happening, which was a blessing in hindsight. But I've just always, I've had that mentality since, you know, basically since I got out of college. Yeah, I know.
You went to Mo State?
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
We partied together. For sure.
Oh, I did not know that. Okay,
yeah. So I'm like, God, you look familiar.
Yeah, she partied with a lot of the older baseball guys.
I did.
I happened to be at their parties. I was that drunk freshman that they all made fun of.
Yeah. Okay. So we definitely did a beer bong together. Yeah. I hope my kids never hear this. But anyway, so once I left my medical career and moved to Missouri, I'm kind of fast forwarding. I started getting certifications in fitness and nutrition and got more into it and decided that I wanted to create a career around it. Because then I would be able to do it on my own time in addition to raising my children because I wasn't working a 9 to 5. So I started to get deeper and deeper into it. And then, as I mentioned, my husband got cancer. And so everything, you know, was put on the back burner. And now, you know, we're almost 2 years out. I'm on fire about being healthy and helping others be healthy and realize that life is truly a gift. I always knew it. You know, you always kind of know it, right? And you know you should eat healthy and like never take any day for granted. But it doesn't really hit you, or I should say it didn't really hit me until I lost my spouse and the father of my children. And now it's like, okay, like every day really is a gift because we don't know what tomorrow is going to bring. And it could bring really good things, but it could also bring really bad things. So with the time we have now and the bodies we have now, we really should be taking care of them. So, yeah.
That's awesome.
So obviously you're very into health and wellness.
Yes.
What would be your number one non-negotiable, like when it comes to like staying healthy?
Well, number one, you have to drink your water. Half your weight in ounces every day, at least.
Half of your weight in ounces. I was going to say your weight.
Yeah. Okay. Half your weight in ounces.
I was going to say I got to drink almost 2 gallons. No, not 2 gallons, but I got to drink a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. And some people, it's no big deal. And some people are like, what? I don't even drink water. But your body's made up mostly of water.
Sure.
Right? So it helps detox and flush and, it helps
you just feel so much better when you're hydrated.
Totally.
Like I know when I haven't drank enough water. Like I mean, I start getting headaches. Yeah, you feel it.
That's what hangovers are, people. Yeah. Like,
well, that's the thing. Like when I was at school down in Missouri State, my sophomore year, I was really, really dehydrated and maybe too much information, but was just constipated. And then that was the thing. They're like, just start drinking more water.
Yeah.
So since then since that time, I've drank a gallon of water a day.
Perfect.
That's my sophomore.
Your skin looks so nice. I can tell. Yeah.
Yeah. I think they started when I was playing football. That was like their standard. They're like gallon water a day.
Yeah.
In high school, so that was like what they told us to do.
There's a reason for that.
For sure.
Right.
100%. And then you could feel it when I started doing it for sure. And it's just like a habit I've kept up for the last 15 years.
It's amazing. Yeah. Well, it's so funny because most people come to me and they want to work with me and they're overweight, they're tired, they don't sleep well. All these things. And the first thing that's the very first thing we talk about is their water consumption. 9 out of 10 people are not drinking enough water.
Yeah. Well, my nutritionist, that was like one of the first things she put on there was like my list of things I got to do every day is a gallon of water. I'm like, hey, you can take that off. I already do that. If you want to add something else, like that's a given.
Yeah.
So
water's number one. What's number two?
Sleep.
That's where I could use some work.
For sure.
I know.
I'm horrible about that.
A lot, you guys, everyone is.
Yeah. It's amazing.
No one, very few people. I have a few friends, we joke that we go to bed at like 9 o'clock and the rest of the world is still awake, but we'll be like, all right, that's it. Bye. I'm going to bed and I'm out. And my phone's on silent because sleep, and I realized sleep was so important. The day I brought my daughter home from the hospital. I remember I literally like think I had a panic attack because I remember thinking like my sleep is never going to be the same and it's so valuable. Like where my sleep went, my mental health went. And so I've been like really adamant about getting a good night's sleep. And I nursed my kids, was up a bunch. So I was I had anxiety while my kids were babies because I just wasn't sleeping.
Yeah, I get it. And we're kind of dealing with that now.
Yes.
I got two kids under three.
Yes. Yeah. It's, you know, it's a lot. But sleep is so valuable. And most people don't get enough sleep. They think they do, but they don't.
What do you recommend in terms of hours slept per person for about 7 to 8?
Yeah. I was going to say 6 to 8. Some people are cool at 6, but
then maybe I'm not too bad. I can get 6.
7 to 8 is ideal. I wear an Oura ring to track mine.
My wife's got the same.
You wear watch. What is it?
This is the Garmin Mark something.
Garmin, you better be sponsoring soon.
Yeah. Garmin.
Aura, you too.
Yeah, exactly. But what does it say? Like, how is your sleep?
It just tells me the amount of hours.
Oh, okay.
That I get. So I'm usually between 6 and 7 hours of sleep.
And how do you feel?
I mean, I feel great.
Right?
But that's the thing is, like, I mean, I'm used to very little sleep. When I was playing baseball and traveling on buses, like, I could not sleep on a bus.
Yeah. I mean, understandably.
It was terrible. So, like, we'd go on road trips, and most of the time we'd leave after a series and drive through the night, and I'm staying up the entire time. And then I get home, then I'm falling asleep, and then I got to turn around and be back at the field in like 4 or 5 hours. So,
I know, it's brutal. Yeah.
So it was just like used to functioning on a little bit of sleep. So
yeah. Well, it really is good for our mind and our body to sleep. I always talk to my kids about when the sun goes down, I'm like, God put the sun down so we can go to sleep, and he brings it back up so we can wake up. Obviously, we don't need 12 hours of sleep, but truly, we're meant to sleep. Our body's meant to rest. That's how we heal and repair. So I say 7 to 8 hours, 6 for those people who are like, I don't need much sleep. But and I always have people count back. So whatever time you have to get up in the morning, count back and just set that. Like, I have to be in bed sleeping, not like going to bed, sleeping by that time.
Yeah, those are two different things.
Correct. And I always tell people I ask people to follow the 10-3-2 rule. You guys know this rule?
No. Tell us.
10 hours before you go to bed, stop caffeine. Uh-huh. 10 hours before you go to bed.
What?
I know. 3 hours before you go to bed, stop eating. 1 or 2 hours before you go to bed, no screens.
Yeah, that'd be, I don't do any of those things.
Right. But if you sleep great, then great. But if you don't, I mean, those are really good rules to follow.
Sure.
For your brain and your body to be able to.
We're already messing up with the caffeine.
No, that's caffeine. Not that caffeine.
No, there's no caffeine.
No caffeine.
Oh, okay.
And
caffeine.
You know what? Element T has sponsored a bunch. So yeah. I will do a little shout out to Element T.
Element, they're great. I
yeah.
Love them. Yeah, I drink the hell out of these. So good.
So they're out of Montana. So
right.
My husband's from Montana. So okay. They were out of Big Sky and they just moved their office to Bozeman.
Oh, cool.
Yeah,
what's the guy's name? Rob Wolf. I think this is his company.
I think
I'm pretty sure he's the owner of it.
I can't remember. My brain, my like short term memory is pretty shot. Yeah. So I don't remember their name, but they're a cool company.
Oh, they're great. I love like they sell these in my gym.
Sponsor us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They sell these in my gym and I will grab one almost every day after training, and then I just keep the fridge stocked here just because I like the taste.
Well,
yeah, we got some in the fridge.
No, that's okay. I mean, I do want one, but it's okay. But I set up we are like a retailer here, so we can buy it at cost.
Oh, really?
You need to talk to Johanna about that.
Oh, okay.
I did not know that.
Oh, yeah.
I've just been ordering it off Amazon.
Yeah, no, talk to Johanna.
Okay.
Nice.
Good to know. Yeah. This stuff's great. Oh, no.
Yeah. Hmm.
The more you know.
Absolutely. And then you've also gotten big into cancer research and fundraising for cancer research.
Yes.
You've raised over $2 million in support?
Yeah.
Shit.
Yeah,
that's incredible.
Yeah. Thank you.
Obviously with your husband and everything that happened, what else is what drives your passion for cancer research and cancer funding and things like that?
Yeah. Great question. So my husband got a drug. So my husband had stage 4 pancreatic cancer. I don't know how much of that story you guys know.
Yeah, pancreatic cancer, that's the one where there's no...
It's bad.
There's no coming back from
it. It's bad.
Pretty much.
The 5-year survival rate is now 13%. It was like 10 when he got diagnosed in 21. So by the time we found my husband's cancer, it was stage 4 freaking everywhere. So we found it because he was constipated. And what had happened, like on and off pretty much all year, what had happened was a tumor grew from the tail of his pancreas, which oftentimes it starts in the tail or the head. It grew arms around his colon and was constricting his colon. It literally squeezed his colon, so we couldn't pass anything up or down.
Oh,
holy shit. That's right.
Yeah,
so
holy shit.
All year, he had been having like stomach pains, and I had given him probiotics because I thought it needed them. And he like thought it was the probiotics, but what was happening was like the probiotics may have like put a light on the issue, put a spotlight on the issue. So, and all year long, he was having stomach pain and back pain. And like, I want people to realize that, like, if you know something's wrong, keep asking questions. And that's the other part about being healthy and eating healthy and sleeping and being a healthy human. Because when things go wrong, then you'll know it's wrong. Versus if you're feeding yourself crap all the time and not sleeping well and feeling like crap all the time, you won't know when things are off. So anywho, all year long, he had stomach pains and was constipated. And like, you know, his sister is a primary care physician, and he like, everything she says was like the Bible. And she, of course, was trying not to freak him out. And it's like, well, it's probably just your microbiome's messed up or whatever. So at the end of the summer, he finally got a colonoscopy, which please get your colonoscopies, everybody, over the age of 40. I think you can get them at 35 now. It's really important because GI cancers are on the rise. Rectal cancer, colorectal cancer, colon cancer, pancreatic cancer, esophageal cancer, all of that is on the rise, FYI. Don't mean to scare you guys.
Was that just from the shit that's in our food and that we're eating?
Eating, drinking, plastics, stress, all the plastics. It's our life. It's the environment we live in. So you need to get checked. So finally, my husband was 47 at diagnosis. So he got a colonoscopy and they didn't see anything. And we're like, okay. They go up, nothing. So we're like, sweet, nothing. We're good.
We're good. We're safe.
We're good. We're safe. It's just, you know, his microbiome, whatever.
Or belly.
Exactly. He's got IBS. So does half his family. I don't know. So anyway, a month later was when he was completely blocked, felt like he had to use the restroom. He couldn't go. And he vomited one night. And I was like, all right, enough's enough. And by the way, y'all, I have babies. Okay. My kids were 4, 2, and 11 months at diagnosis. So all year, my son's whole first year of life, I'm trying to keep him alive. You know, and like I have two babies, two other toddlers. And so there's just a lot going on. But anyway, we went to the hospital and did all his vitals and they took a picture. And obviously it was a lot long. Like I'm cliff noting. These are cliff notes. But yeah, they took a picture of his belly and came back in and, you know, said that they saw three tumors. And we're like, my husband was a hypochondriac. He was super freaked out about everything. So on the way to the hospital, he's like, do you think this is stomach cancer? And I'm like, of course it's not stomach cancer. Absolutely not. And then they freaking came back and said, we found three tumors. And I was like, okay, cool. Like, do a biopsy. Like, let's just make sure, you know, like, there's no way this is cancer. Like, not to our family. Are you kidding me? Like, one of my best friends had just beaten stage 3 colorectal cancer, like, the year prior. And another good friend had beaten lymphoma. So I'm like, I'm familiar with people having cancer, but it's not my family. Of course not. And the doctor was like, I'll never forget her face. She was like this petite little woman. And she's like, no, we're pretty sure it's cancer. And you're right there, your life just like stops, right? And so they had to move quick. They had to put a tube down his nose into his belly. And
like that day?
Oh, right away. Because he was blocked.
Couldn't poop.
Proliferation. Like he could have gotten a sepsis. It was bad. So they had to drain him. And then, you know, we had to wait for beds because of COVID, by the way. Wait for beds. Oh, yeah. The whole time. I mean, hours, days. Oh, yeah. When he finally passed, I'm coming to the end. Well, I already said I'm a widow. We were in the emergency room that very last day, like, I don't know, 6, 8 hours.
So wait, so the diagnosis was in 21 and he passed in 23.
And so this is all because of the question about the cancer research funding. So I'll get to that. I'm sorry. I can be long-winded.
No, go for it.
Okay. Yeah. So
you got all the time in the world.
Yeah, so they initially put a tube down him to drain his belly, got him into the hospital, and basically they were like, this was at Mercy, by the way. For those of you not in St. Louis, Mercy is a heart hospital. It's not a research hospital. It's not a cancer hospital. It's the closest ER to our home. So the doctor there was like, basically he's like, I'm really sorry. My dad passed from this too. We're going to give him some chemo, but like, you know. And I was like, what? Like, no, that can't be. Like, you're not telling me my husband's going to die. So anyway, luckily, because my girlfriend had beaten stage 3 colorectal cancer because my husband was a partner in Edward Jones. We had connections to Siteman. And so we were able to secure him a bed, which, by the way, I am very grateful for, but I do think it's ridiculous that here in America, you have to know people to get beds in hospitals and see doctors. Mm-hmm. I think that's a problem.
For sure.
Just for the record, I'm very grateful and blessed that we were able to, because Kyle, that kind of cancer grows very quickly. And his was freaking everywhere, all over his stomach, liver, lung. So anyway, we were able to secure a bed at Siteman, and they drained him. They put a stent in his colon that released his colon. Like, it's kind of like, you know, like those Chinese
finger traps,
like something similar to that into his colon. Open it up. Thank God. So he was able to pass, and we went to Montana. He wanted to see his family before he started chemo. So we go to Montana. The freaking cancer continues to grow while we're there. We're there a week, you guys. Above the stent. The cancer, pardon me, continued to grow. Just so freaking ridiculous. We had to immediately come back.
So was he getting constricted again?
Yeah. I know. And we're just like, this can't be.
Oh. Like, that's extremely fast.
Correct. And like, the doctors and the family are like, cancer doesn't grow that fast. Well, guess what? Pancreatic cancer apparently does. It's freaking like, it came on real freaking quick. So finally we get back to St. Louis. Thank God Dr. Keon Lim, who's a pancreatic cancer researcher, took Kyle on. You guys, not many doctors were willing. They were going to put him on hospice. I found this out last year at one of my fundraisers, but all the other doctors were like, he's a hospice case. Like, don't even try chemo. And Dr. Lim basically looked at us and was like, that is a young family. He's a young guy. He's healthy. Let's try it. So he signed off on the papers and no one else would. Like, the tumor board. So just so everybody knows, if you have cancer and you go into Siteman on Mondays, they do a tumor board where everybody looks at your case and helps decide the treatment plan. Everyone was like, this guy's a hospice. So Dr. Lim went against their orders. Gave him chemo. The tumor released off his colon again. It was not a pretty ride at all, but for 17 months we battled. The first 5 months, we were in and out of the hospital, of course, blood transfusions. I mean, our whole life stopped in every way. Children, I had to hire all sorts of people to come help because his sister came down, but 5 months of regular treatment. There are only 2 standard of care treatments for pancreatic cancer. Because it's a tough cancer to treat, there aren't that many researchers. There's not very much money that goes to pancreatic cancer. So there were only 2 that are FDA approved. Kyle didn't have any genetic markers, which if you have some genetic markers, sometimes they can target it a little better. And if it hasn't grown to other organs, they can take it out. There's a procedure called the Whipple procedure where they can take the tumor out, and sometimes that can help. Kyle wasn't eligible. So he didn't have any special treatment. That he had what they would call bad luck pancreatic cancer. And you're just like, are you kidding me? Like, is
that's
this real?
That's all you got for us? It's just bad luck?
Correct. Is this real life? So they did the first 2 standard care treatments. He had a mixed response during the first one, a few rounds, and then he was stable with the second. But the problem with pancreatic cancer and some other cancers is they learn the treatment, so it grows back quickly. That's why the survival rate for pancreatic cancer is not very high. A lot of people, well, only 36% of patients actually respond to the treatment that is FDA approved right now for pancreatic cancer. So it's nuts, I should say, 3 years ago. A lot has happened since then. So basically, after a couple months of that, I looked at the doctor and was like, well, what else is there? And he's like, there really isn't much else. There's some things in labs right now that are coming. So we just have to basically like keep holding on, you know? And I'm like, okay, well, what do you mean by that?
Because the pancreas isn't something you can just go and remove like you can with like a
correct
kidney or something.
And remember, it's everywhere.
Right.
Like, can't remove. They won't go in and do surgery if it's in the bloodstream, right? And right. It's already metastasized. But I'm like, what other options are there? And he said, there's something in a lab. And I said, okay, explain to me, how do you get a drug in a lab that's extremely promising into a patient? What does that look like? And he's like, well, it takes a lot of, and I'm like, a lot of what? And he's like, a lot of money. And I was like, okay, how much money? Like, I'm just wondering. Because I'm thinking, if there's something in a lab right now that can save my husband's life, we'll spend our entire life savings and ask everybody else.
Yeah.
Like, what is the number? And he basically said it's about $3 million to get a drug from a lab into 50 to 60 patients, so a phase one trial. So I was like, okay, I will find you $3 million. And he's like,
okay, lady.
Okay. Yeah, exactly. I'm like, no, really? He's like, you don't have to do that. I'm like, but I do. If you're telling me that we can get this, like, if you get, and I said it in layman terms, like, if you get $3 million and you can start a study, then Kyle can be a patient. Like, that was my thinking. And so I literally started a fund almost immediately. And the details are fuzzy. Okay. It's like, maybe it was like a few weeks later. I don't remember, but pretty quickly I started a fund that went straight to Dr. Lim. So something to note, as you're donating to funds, to organizations, some organizations obviously have overhead, and you really need to know what percent of the money is going to where you're donating. So I went straight to Dr. Lim and said, what, like, I want a fund that goes into your bank account, essentially. And so I was able to open one through WashU because I was thinking we need to raise $3 million. So I start writing emails, making phone calls, posting on social media, calling all these people to try to figure out how we're going to get this funded ASAP. In the meantime, I had posted on social media, as I mentioned. I got a hold of the study and saw, I used to work in pharmaceutical sales, right? So saw who was manufacturing the drug that we needed. And I put on social media, does anybody know anybody at this company? And someone that I worked with and had volunteered with, so we had more of a personal relationship, sent me a message and said, yeah, I'm friends with the CEO and president of that company. Here's his number.
Oh, wow.
Perfect. Yeah.
So I call this guy. I'm like, hey, you don't know me from Adam. It's my story. This is my husband. I need your drug. How do we get this drug into my husband? He's like, well, it's currently being studied for rheumatoid arthritis. I'm like, cool. We'll get him a rheumatoid arthritis diagnosis. Piece of cake.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, no, it doesn't really work that way. And actually, we're kind of like tabling that drug for now. I'm like, yeah, but my husband is like on his deathbed. So
untable it.
Correct. Untable it. And so he's like, I meet with my board on Monday. Let's see if we can get a compassionate use approved. Compassionate use is if a researcher uses a drug and it has phenomenal results, and that researcher can use it on one of their patients as a Hail Mary. Compassionate use. Those of you listening, write that down. Compassionate use. You may have to use that someday. And so he's like, have you heard of compassionate use? I'm like, I've heard of it, but it sounds like a bunch of loopholes. But if that's the only way to go, that's the only way to go. So then meeting with his board on Monday. So I Google his board. I'm like, who is the board of this pharmaceutical company? Number two on his board is somebody I work directly under. Then I call him. I'm like, hey, remember me? Told him the story. He's like, all right, we're going to try to get this approved. We have a meeting on Monday. I'm like, oh, I know you do. by the end of the week, they said yes. And obviously Dr. Lim was then made aware. Email started going to him that this crazy woman was calling the head of the pharmaceutical companies. And Dr. Lim was like, hey, Kira, you've been busy. I'm like, I told you.
Get this thing.
Yeah. Yeah. So by the end of the week, we had a yes from that company and a yes from another company who also had an inhibitor to let Dr. Lim use it on Kyle. And so then we had to go to WashU. They said no initially. Again, we started to light fires. They changed their mind. They don't like when I tell people that, but it's part of the story. And like, we almost got shot down here in St. Louis. And then we went to the FDA. They said yes. I don't even know. A few weeks later, we were able to start the treatment. And it gave Kyle another 12 months of life. It wasn't pretty, like I said. We were in the hospital, tons of blood transfusions. He ended up having a side effect from the immunotherapy because that was something we were able to use because of the study drug. But the good news, here's the good news. From the time he got it, the March of 22 to December of 22, his tumor markers went from extremely high to non-detectable. It worked.
Wow.
His cancer was non-detectable. The problem is that he got colitis from the immunotherapy. So he had to be on steroids. That December, we decided we were going to go visit family. His tumor markers were continuing to go down, 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 down. He hadn't been on chemo because the immunotherapy had started up his immune system fire. It was only attacking the cancer. So like Kyle started to be Kyle again. We go and visit my family, his family. He's on a steroid, though, to reduce the colitis. Pardon me. Unfortunately, steroids counteract immunotherapy. So if you imagine it's a fire, the immunotherapy fire, the steroid is spitting water on that fire. Yeah. And we didn't realize how out the fire was until January after the holidays were over. His numbers started to spike again because they, you know, they take his blood and always check his tumor markers. It started to go up again. And we're like, huh? And the doctor's like, it's fine. This happens. Don't worry. We'll just get him back on, you know, we'll get back, do the treatment again. We'll start chemo again. Well, from there on out, it was a battle. Treatment, immunotherapy, hospitalization, back on steroids. Treatment, hospitalization. So essentially, the next 3 months, it was in and out of the hospital and the cancer won. Yeah. So.
So if it wasn't for the steroids, do you think that he probably would have made it through?
So, yes. Now, the side effect of one of the side effects, and it's a small subset of patients from immunotherapy, is colitis, which is swelling of the colon. Steroids is the only thing that can combat that. I think that if this, and this is why, a long story long, why I'm fighting so hard to get cancer research in this area funded is because if this study had been in the works for years waiting for funding, people would fund a little bit here, a little bit there, a little bit here. If it had been fully funded and Kyle was able to have, he would have gotten that treatment at the beginning. He wouldn't have been so compromised, right? Wow. Like he wouldn't have already had, he had 37, I don't even know how many rounds of chemo. I lost track, a lot, many, many rounds of chemo. He wouldn't have had to have all of that chemo had that treatment been approved and he had not been so compromised. So the steroids were the necessary evil. I mean, and
there's nothing else to combat colitis other than steroids. Damn.
I know. Damn. I know.
Colitis runs in my family.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, it's crazy. It's cancer. It's like in the GI system, it's all so, it's just crazy. But it lit a fire in me because, you know, like I'm working through all the different stages of grief, but like anger was a big part of it, right? Like why isn't cancer research better funded? Why with GI cancers on the rise, people losing their lives younger and younger, why aren't people up in arms about this? Why isn't more money flooding into this type of research? Because people are going to continue to die if we don't do that. And so that's why I started. And it wasn't just me raising $2 million. There were tons of people that have helped, tons of people that have donated, obviously. It's a whole army. You know, Kyle had tons of people that loved and adored him. But I just was like, you know what? I'm going to still raise $3 million. We're going to get this drug into other people. And it is. The FDA has picked up Kyle's drug, essentially, that treatment, and it's in humans now. And there's also, because of some other funds we've raised, there are other studies similar with a similar drug that are getting into patients. So the good news is that because of Kyle's sacrifice, us sacrificing Kyle, other people's lives are hopefully going to be the quality of their lives better. You know, dare I say saved. So that, you know, is like the little bit of silver lining that we can paint around it. And I hope that it keeps his legacy alive. And then also for my children to have something that they can help continue. And it also helped me, I think, that first year and a half, kind of process and, I don't know, feel like I'm doing something.
Yeah. Are you, so you're still fundraising and doing things like that?
Yes, I am.
What's the goal?
Pardon me?
What's the goal to get to?
Well, $3 million. I mean, I feel like I told Dr. Lim $3 million, so I don't want to stop until then. I'm going to be honest with you. I'm pretty worn out after last year because my team Kyle raised $1 million the last 2 years. And so I'm pretty wiped out, but I still talk about it. I still will be fundraising and funneling funds to Dr. Lim so that he can continue that research because it's just that important.
Just not to the extent that you were doing it.
Yeah, I don't think I'm going to promise pedal the cause. I'm going to raise $1 million again. Sorry, David Dreyer, any pedal people that are listening. Because it, you know, it took a lot out of me. And you know, it's part of my healing. But it's interesting because now I'm just sitting now. Like, I don't have any big challenges ahead of me right now. And I'm really uncomfortable. Like, it's almost like, now what?
Yeah,
what do I do?
Right.
You know? And, you know, some people are like, you just got to sit in it. And I'm like, I don't like sitting in it. Like, where can I run? Should I start running again? Should I, like, what should I do?
Start a podcast.
Right? Start a podcast, which I did.
Yeah.
Well, you know, when you talked a lot about the pharmaceutical company stuff there, mm-hmm. now that, like, you know, I think about how, I mean, we obviously, I think a lot of people's opinions over the last few years on pharmaceutical companies have
mm-hmm.
changed.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and, you know, where we're kind of realizing that they're really only profitable if people are sick. Like, do you think, or like, I always wonder, like, I mean, are you think we'd be, you know, I don't think it's very profitable to cure cancer.
Correct.
Like, it's profitable
to keep
people
percent.
Sick and to
yes.
treat them. Treatment is profitable. A
yes.
cure is not.
Yes.
And like, so it's just so ass backwards and like, it's so wrong. And like that, like, I mean, you know, especially with everything you've gone through, like that's gotta, like, you gotta think about, I mean, I'm sure that's crossed your mind.
Oh yeah. I know way too much now. I actually went to Washington, D.C. last year to stand up and talk with Congress members and their cohorts. About bringing more funding to GI cancers, which I'm like sitting there in like a purple jacket. I'm like, this is ridiculous that a cancer widow has to fly to Washington, D.C. and share my personal story to this congressperson's like note taker. And then maybe they'll say yes to the bill that will provide more funding for cancer research. I'm like, what world are we living in right now? And actually, this year they asked me to come speak. And to be honest with you, I'm just tired. Like, I told them no, because I'm wiped and I have to focus on my children. And not that I don't think that I'd make a difference, but at the same time, I'm like, I just need a minute to think about what my next step is, what my next move is. But you are absolutely right. There is a lot of money in cancer research drugs, not cancer research drugs. I'm sorry.
Cancer treatment.
A lot of money. And that is another part of my anger, is that these treatments should be funded. Like, there should be more people surviving, living with cancer, maybe not curing, living with cancer. There should be way more than two. Now there's three FDA approved treatments for pancreatic cancer, but there should be more efficacious treatments. They're in labs right now, you guys. There are promising things in labs currently waiting for funding. And these doctors have to fly around the country and sell themselves, sell their science.
Right, but then they have to then go sell that to a pharmaceutical company.
Correct.
Who's going to make it. And
correct.
They're going to look at that and be like, well
it's going to take money from everything.
Well, it's like, if we give this drug to somebody and it cures their problem, then they're not a customer anymore. Like, that's and it's like, it's so fucked up. But, I mean, unfortunately, that's the world we live in.
It truly is. And we have a for-profit, our healthcare is for-profit.
Yes.
Period.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a business.
Yeah.
It's a business. That's why the CEO.
And I'm sure the medical bills, you know.
Can't even imagine.
So I calculated everything and I had the doctor's office help me because I wanted to know. I wanted to know my facts. It was $2 million for Kyle to keep him alive for 17 months. And that's with some of the drugs donated. That does not. So that's insurance, our money. That does not count our loss of income. The money I spent on childcare.
Sure, that was.
I mean, I don't even know how much. And of course, we're going to pay every. I mean,
right, you're gonna pay whatever,
whenever, it doesn't matter. But the point is, $2 million to keep Kyle alive. It's $3 million for a phase one study. Like, what? It's a huge mess, people.
Right.
Like, it's very black and white to me, but I'm a cancer widow.
And in the grand scheme of things, like, I mean, you know, and that's just one person with cancer.
Correct.
Think of how many people are out there with cancer.
Exactly. Like
$2 million to keep him alive for 18 months.
Yes.
18 months.
17, but
months,
who's counting? Yeah.
Like, it's insane.
It's insane. It's insane. And yeah, it's, you know, my kids are so little, like, and that's the part that fuels me. It's like, they don't have their dad anymore. You know, Kyle and I were older when we got married. Like, I waited a long time to find my spouse. And then you know, 7 years later, we have three kids, a home, a life, and cancer takes them away, you know, and it could have been prevented if we could all take this a little more serious. I mean, that's being a little ridiculous, but you know, it does. It angers me. And it's, you know, it's been a roller coaster, truly.
Kira, you've been through the hardest shit that people go through. What's kept you from breaking?
Oh, I break. I do have faith and trust in God, although I question there are certain times, you know, where I'm like,
why
us? Yeah. And it's funny because some people are like, I've never heard you say why us. I'm like, oh, I say it. It doesn't make sense to me, but I have to believe that there's a reason for this. It does not make, it doesn't make sense. Like I look at my kids and even look at myself, like how am I equipped to raise these children by myself? I'm not, you know? So there's a lot of questions that I ask, but I do my faith in God for sure. And then just looking at those kids and thinking, I have to do this for them.
I was going to say, how do you balance it all?
I don't know. I mean, I don't really. I've tried to keep, that's why I've kept teaching cycling. I've kept that. It's 2 days a week. I started this podcast to have this little piece, you know, a little bit of a career or professional part of my life, because otherwise it is the children and the home and grieving and all the things that come with, you know, the passing of a loved one of your spouse, you know, the paperwork, the home, all the bills, all, I mean, he did all that stuff. So it's like, now I'm managing this house, you know, which it's not a small house. Like we bought the house and we're like, we're going to fill it with kids. Yeah. We did fill it with kids and he managed a bunch of that stuff. And now it's all on me. And like, you know, the post-death paperwork and all the fallout, you know, it's a lot. And, sometimes I'm doing great and sometimes I'm not doing so great. And I just have to keep going, you know, and trust that God's got us and there's a reason for all this.
What kind of support system do you have here in St. Louis?
So I have friends and like I said, two of my really close friends have beaten cancer. So they've been a great support. And I have another couple of friends who have been in our lives for a long time. And my parents come up every once in a while. About once a month or every other month. And then I have hired help. I actually hired one of Kyle's night nurses to help. I have a couple different sitters, but like, that's it. Yeah. Which I'm blessed to be able to hire people to help me. Like if it were just me, like I would have lost it by now.
Yeah.
Publicly lost it. Yeah.
Grief changes someone mm-hmm. permanently. Mm-hmm. Like how has your worldview evolved since you've lost your husband?
Yeah. So it's interesting you say that because recently I've been thinking like, gosh, I can't wait to get back to myself. Like how I used to feel, you know, loving life, you know, colors everywhere. And I have to remind myself, like I'm that person died when Kyle died. Like I am totally a new person and I do view life very differently. And my thoughts are more negative than they used to be. You know, like I trusted that I was marrying somebody to live the rest of my life with him. And that's not happening anymore. And so I do have a more negative view of things than I used to. And I'm trying really hard to turn that around. And again, it ebbs and flows. But yeah, I mean, the glasses I wear look way different than they used to. And I do view life very differently. Yeah, I don't know. And like right now I'm not in a great place. Like I don't love winter. January, February are not my friends. And I think also Kyle's cancer started coming back this time of year. And so you're like, your body remembers. Yeah. And so, you know, I just have to like think to myself, like I have got to keep going. These kids, I have to keep going one foot in front of the other and take on the things that I need to take on and, you know, not do the things I don't need to do, you know? So I don't know, I just have to keep going and try to do better, you know, try to be more positive while also giving myself some grace.
Of course. And you deserve every bit of that grace.
Yeah.
mean, you could go back to, you know, the beginning of your widowhood journey. Like, would there be a piece of advice you'd give yourself?
That's a great question. What would I give to myself as a new widow? I think I would just warn, like, prepare myself that, you know, the first year is, you're basically shocked. Everything's a first. And that, like, anniversaries and birthdays, like, I would just prepare myself. Like, it's going to hurt, like, kind of a lot. And triggers are going to come up out of nowhere. Cause you'll be having a good day and then all of a sudden you'll hear a song, or like, I'll drive by a place that Kyle and I went, or and triggered, boom, mood down, tears falling. So yeah, I would definitely just tell my old self, like, hang on, it's going to be rough, but you can do it. Yeah. No, sorry, this is
good. No, you're fine.
It's great. It's hard not to. Hit me here, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Cause it's real life and real humans. And like, it's not, you know, everyone thought it was an old people disease. You know, and then it's like your husband, like.
Yeah. You never think it's going
to
happen to you.
Ever. We were at my girlfriend's ring the bell party, and her husband was like, you know, thank you everybody for being here. You guys have all been, you know, amazing throughout Joanna's journey. But we're going to just know we're going to be here when someone else gets it, because 1 in 3 people essentially will be affected by cancer. And so just know we're going to be here too. And I distinctly remember looking around the room being like, wow, I wonder who's going to be next. Never thinking it's my husband.
Yeah.
Not my husband right here holding my baby.
Right.
No way.
Now, with your kids being so young, mm-hmm. What are some of the things that you do with them to help them remember that?
Yeah.
Remember their dad, remember that legacy that he has?
Yeah. So we have pictures of him everywhere still. And I had Annie's Hope. I had them come very early on in Kyle's diagnosis. They're an organization that helps kids through grief. And so they did a really good job of doing like crafts and creating memory boxes and talking with them from a therapeutic standpoint about Kyle being sick. And then when he passed, all the way through that. So I already had my kids had a good foundation. They knew, you know, what was happening. It was not a surprise to them. And so, and I've been very open and honest with them about it. So we talk about Kyle being, you know, in heaven and how he's enjoying himself up there. We pray, you know, about him every night and at the dinner table. We talk about memories. We'll go through pictures. You know, we just talk about it very matter of fact. Like, he's a part of their lives and will be forever.
Oh, absolutely.
And when my kids, so this last week was father-daughter dance, which I know you guys, it's like, they do like donuts with dad. I'm like, really? Do we have to do that?
Yeah.
And then father-daughter dance. And my daughter, like a few days before, like just broke down out of nowhere. And it's the worst. You're just like, it just pulls you just stop everything. It pulls your heart out, because it's one thing, like, I lost my spouse, but like to try to think about your children, like my kids lost their, like they're experiencing grief and the sorrow and so differently. It's this huge hole in their life, the other half of their foundation. And so that was a killer. And my dad came in and did the dance, you know, from Omaha. They flew in and did the dance with my daughters. But, you know, we just talk about him. And I let him cry. And, you know, I have a bunch of his, like, his favorite suits, his favorite coats. I have his skis, his wedding jet, you know. Like, I have a bunch of his stuff still that I'm going to let them have, you know, when they're older to remember him. But just the open communication has been all the advice that people have given to me. That I have, you know, in turn, you know, with my kids, we talk about them a lot, and pictures everywhere. So, yeah.
How would you say that they are doing with it?
So it's hard to say, because they're kids, right? But like, you know, my older daughter is very expressive and emotional. She's a little bit like her mom, and she can be a little dramatic. And so, you know, she has my highest highs and lowest lows, I would say. And she was close with Kyle, right? She was our first baby. We moved to Toronto and back, like the three of us, and had a lot of time together. And so, you know, she gets frustrated, or, you know, I don't know if it's her personality or if it's the combination. Yeah, I don't know, you know. And then my younger two, you know, I would say they're handling it better. They talk about him and they say they miss him. I don't know how much they remember him actually versus two and 11 months when he was diagnosed. So of course we have pictures, but, and then also, you know, when I'm anxious or like I'm having a tough time, it totally bleeds onto them. Like, you know what I mean? It's just how it goes. So we're doing okay. And I have my kids in counseling and I'm in therapy, of course. But it's just going to be a lifelong thing for us. So, yeah.
So, what's a daily routine like for you? You have three kids, mm-hmm. and have a coaching business. I'm sure you mm-hmm. don't have the luxury of slacking off.
Yeah. I'd like to think I do, but I don't. Well, I do. I just don't allow myself. I should put it that way. So recently, typically I get up whenever one of the kids comes and wakes me up. And you know, we get the day going with breakfast and then get them ready for school. And my nanny comes to help facilitate that because there's something, I don't know if it's because Kyle's gone, the way I treat my kids, but I'm very like loving with them and I'm not probably as strict as I should be with them. So I still do things for them that I shouldn't do probably. So it's kind of an ordeal getting ready for the day.
Like what?
I'll brush their teeth. If they don't brush their teeth, I'm like, come here. I'm going to brush your teeth, you know, and like pick their outfits out and put their socks on, like, you know, things that they should be doing. And sure. Again, it's probably, you know, it's a little bit of me feeling bad that I'm the only one. And like, I don't know. They should be doing a lot more on their own. But my nanny does come to help keep things running that we're out of door on time. So I'm very lucky in that way. Then I'll drop them off at school. And then I typically either work out or I'm teaching and then have meetings for at AU, our entrepreneur club, or my podcast. And then doctor's appointments or stuff for the house or bills or my car or, you know, school stuff. Like there's something the whole time. But recently, this is something really cool. Have you guys heard of the Miracle Morning?
No.
Oh my God, I'm so excited to tell you about it. So because January's been rough, I'm like, I have got to do something different. Normally I read my kids a book. We do a meditation every night. I fall asleep in their bed. When I get up, I like drag myself up, brush my teeth, put my pajamas on, go to bed. I'm like, you know what? And then wake up when they wake up. I'm like, I need to make a change. Like I need to have my own bedtime routine and my own time in the morning. So I have a friend who's a rabbi who I talk to regularly. And he is also a counselor. And for every one of his clients, he recommends reading this book called The Miracle Morning. So he's like, here, I think you need to do this. So I grab the book. And what the premise of the book is, you basically set your alarm and you don't snooze. Okay. So 5 a.m., whatever it is, 5:30, to allow yourself a half an hour to an hour by yourself before the day starts. So I've been doing this. And what you do is you, first thing you do when you get up and you brush your teeth right away. You get dressed because normally I would like get out of bed, like put my robe on, go get coffee, get out of bed, get dressed, do a morning meditation, which I'm a huge fan of meditation. I did a lot of that during Kyle's treatment. I think it helped me keep somewhat sane. And then I do readings like one of Bob Goff's books. So like reading meditations or what have you. So I do that. And then I journal, which do either one of you journal?
Yes.
Okay. So I've like fallen off and I'm back on.
I go through stints where I'm really good about it. And then I fall off for a month or two. And
totally.
I get back to it. I'm on a time right now where I'm not doing it.
Yeah.
I need to get back to it.
Maybe this will.
Yeah. Kick me in the ass.
Let's exactly. And then exercise, like moving before my kids get up. So even if it's just like push-ups or sit-ups.
Something.
Yeah. And so I've been doing this and it actually does, like it makes, like puts a little pep in my step. And then by the time my kids are up, like I've already had my coffee. I'm like ready.
Yeah.
So that's like one of my recent endeavors.
That's great.
So yeah, we did
5 a.m. club.
The 5 a.m. club.
Yeah.
So like kind of the very similar.
Yes.
Things. It was, you know, basically you got to wake up at 5 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
you know, it was 20 minutes of some sort of meditation, 20 minutes of learning, and then 20 minutes of exercise.
Yeah.
Or something. It was like something you're supposed to do every day.
Yeah.
Did it for a while. Yeah. Get back to it.
Yep. I know. You got to keep it. Maybe this is your sign. Yeah.
5 a.m. is tough.
How did you? Well, what time did you go to bed?
Well, that's the problem, too.
Exactly. So. Yeah. You have to back it up.
Our 7-month-old or 8. Shit, it'll be. Today the 6?
Yeah.
Tomorrow's the 6. He'll be 8 months old tomorrow.
Oh my goodness.
But yeah, he's going through a wake up at sometime between 4 and 5 a.m. right now. And so I just get up when he gets up.
Yeah.
Wait for him to wake me up. And then I kind of get my day started. But I feed him.
Yeah.
Hang out with him on the couch for a few minutes. Then I just sits next to me while I do all my things. But
you also need to figure out what book we're reading this month.
We're a little behind on that.
Yeah.
Oh, shit. 5. What about Miracle Morning?
Yeah. There we go. Miracle Morning. There we go. We'll do it.
Yep.
Easy. It's an easy read.
Perfect.
Perfect. Well, we've been trying to figure out what we're going to read this month.
Yeah, we haven't
kind of gave up on January.
Yeah,
January we took the month off.
Well, that's because we did the book review so late into January.
Yeah, because
trying to get the wives on to or your ex-wife and your wife to do the show.
Yeah, but, ever since we started the show, Pat and I read a book together every month.
I love
and then we would just do a solo podcast, which is, or call them duets when it's just the two of us.
Yeah,
and then we'd like kind of review the book.
That's awesome.
And we've done that. We did that for the first 12 months of podcast, and then January we kind of fell off.
Yeah,
but we did the most recent book review we did. It was him, my wife, him, and his ex-wife. We all read the same book, and we kind of had had everybody in. And
it's called Good Inside by Dr. Becky.
Yeah, I know Dr. Becky.
She's the best.
I don't know her, right. But yeah.
So we read her book, and then we had the moms on.
Yeah, it was fun.
It's a fun show.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
Dr. Becky's the bomb.
Miracle Morning.
So what's the plan with your show? Tell us about it.
Yes, we can. So have people on that have been through something. The whole idea is to have people, allow people to share how they've turned their pain into purpose. I also have entrepreneurs on too, because we know entrepreneurism, like being an entrepreneur, is not easy. And so I love spotlighting local St. Louis companies. But I just like people to be vulnerable and tell their story, because we're all people, and I think a lot of times, perception's reality, but it's actually not reality. And if people open up, you realize like we've all got a story and we've all got a story to share. And, so I love having, I've had oncologists on, I've had cancer survivors, like I said, business owners. I love talking about health and wellness stuff, again, because I'm on fire about, controlling what you can control. And you guys, we can control what we put in our bodies. We can control what we do with our days. And it's important. It really is. And so I'll have people on to support that message. But yeah, it's fun. We're like 20 some episodes in. Next week I have, she's an oncologist, a surgeon. Oh,
cool.
Yeah.
Right up your alley.
She's studying. It's interesting. I have been made aware of and gotten kind of close with two oncologists that are studying the effects of stress on cancer, the metastases, how quickly cancer metastasizes.
That's the right word.
Yeah. Yeah.
I know my brain. I'm telling you, my brain.
We're just
like,
go with it and say yes.
Yeah. Okay. That's it. Yep. Stress makes cancer grow so much faster. So much faster. It's crazy. Like in the studies in the mice. And granted, our bodies aren't exactly like mice, but it's the best we get. So that's my like plug to myself and everyone else. Like, try to reduce your stress in some way, shape, or form. Meditation, yoga, whatever.
Exercise.
Limit your caffeine and alcohol intake. Sleep. It matters. So she's going to come on and talk about that kind of stuff next week.
Is there like an ultimate guest that you'd like to have on your show?
Good question. Gosh. I don't know. I'd have to think about that. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I haven't.
When you figure it out, let us know.
Yeah, I will.
Out of all your guests you've had so far, which one's been one of the more fun interviews that you've done?
Oh, good question. Let's see. Who have I loved having on? So many. Well,
it's the same for us. It's a tough question.
Yeah, it is.
I couldn't answer that. Yeah.
Narrow it down to probably like 10 or 15.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's hard. Gosh, one of my favorites. I keep thinking one of my close friends, Joanna, the one that beat stage 3 colorectal cancer. Her story is crazy. she just had her baby just turned one. He was a surrogate, or she had a surrogate. She was just a really awesome, she is a really awesome human. It was really positive throughout her journey. And I was lucky enough to be by her side, you know, a friend of hers while she had cancer, and she beat it. And she was an example for us and for me while Kyle was battling, and a huge support system. So she's been on and shared her story, and, you know, we're really close, and her, you know, her family is amazing. They invite us for holidays to come spend holidays with them. And so I was really honored that she came on and shared her story, because it's a powerful one. So, yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And where do you see the show going? What's the goal with the show? Just continuing to spotlight those people?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And hopefully provide hope. Because sometimes, you know, life can be tough. We all know that. You know, there's a lot going on right now. There's always going to be a lot going on. We all have children. Mm-hmm. Young kids, you know, and sometimes life feels hopeless in certain situations. And, you know, like Caleb said at that ring the bell party, like, life's going to continue to happen. And the more you can relate to people and be vulnerable and realize we're in this together, that we're not alone, the better off we're going to be. You know, and I believe, truly believe, that we're all brought to this earth to make it a better place. Like, we all have a purpose. We're all meant to live homogeneously, you know, together. So I just hope that this connects people and provides hope.
That's awesome. That's
perfect.
Now, with where you're at in your journey, have you started dating since?
I was wondering if this question was going to come up.
Yeah.
A little.
A little?
Yeah.
How's that going?
You know, it's interesting.
Yeah.
It's hard because, first of all, I'm like trying to figure out who I am now.
Again.
You know, I'm a widow. I'm not a divorcee. I'm not, it's different, right? Sure. And it's funny because if like a guy is interested and, you know, we'll be talking, let's say, and they'll be like, so like, you have your kids every weekend? I'm like,
yeah, I can't pass them off anymore.
Yeah. Every day.
Yeah.
It's your two.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm still trying to figure it out. It's interesting to navigate.
Sure.
But you know, I don't think that I'm meant to be alone. I think that we're, you know, God made us to have a partner. And so, you know, I'm open to it, but I also, you know, realize just how important it is, whoever I do bring into my life, you know, eventually when kids get involved, like it's a big deal.
Oh, absolutely.
Like my kids, you know, and my kids crave attention from males, crave it. It's like soccer games. My kids are always trying to play with the dads, and it's like, it's sad for me because I know what's happening. So, you know, I'm trying to really be careful with who I introduce them to, or who I will introduce them to. But I know that they need some sort of male figures in their life. So I just,
have you ever brought them up here to the club? Let them run around up here?
I have a while back. I know, but actually way before all you guys joined. Yeah. Maybe I should bring them up now because there's way more people.
How long have you been up here?
So I started recording my podcast last summer, and then I like officially joined in the fall. But yeah, you're right. I should bring them up here.
We're not too far off. I was in October.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're not.
So yeah, no, I bring my boys up here all the time to run around. They love the pickleball court and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And they run. There was one night it was just me and Corey up here, and the boys
run out.
Yeah, just going nuts. Like, sweet.
My kids. So my youngest is four. They, you know, they like that. You know that Jenga set we get. We have that's everywhere when they come. Like all the ping pong balls. I'm like, I feel that's like fun. I should probably buy a pack of ping pong balls because who knows where my kids have put them. But yeah, so dating's. Well, you know, I'm open to it, and you know, just gonna see how things play out. But yeah.
What do you think the biggest misconception is about being a parent? What's like one thing you wish people?
Golly. The biggest misconception. Wow. Think about that. I don't know what people think about single parents.
Yeah.
I guess that's a question for you too.
You know. Honestly, I mean, I don't really know. I haven't had anybody ask me or say anything or make a comment, but I know like on my side, I know that there's times where I think Melissa doesn't realize, like, because she has a partner.
This is your ex.
Yeah, and I don't. And she has that person and family here to fall back on. I don't have anyone.
Oh, family and stuff.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like her, yeah, like her parents and her are all here. I don't have any of that
right
here.
Totally.
So it is like when I have the kids, it's all on my own and things like that. I know the biggest for me, the biggest one is like when it comes to playing hockey. So I play hockey twice a week.
Okay.
And so having to get a babysitter, like the guys are like, oh, let's go grab drinks afterwards. Yep. I'm like, I'm sorry, guys, I got to get home. And they're like, well, come on, you got a babysitter. I'm like,
you don't get it.
I'm like, no, yeah, but I'm not paying to go. I'm already paying more to play hockey every night.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not paying more to play hockey and then go drink beers or pay more to drink beers. And have like, mm-hmm. I'm going home.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's already late.
Yeah,
too.
Yes. Games are all like 10 o'clock at night. But yeah, I mean that's been one of the things. But it's not easy, especially like with the support and not having the full, you know, like having somebody that I can truly count. Like I'm not having a partner there. Like, oh hey, can you help me? Can you go grab the kids or like this? Like there's been times where, like I've had to call Melissa. I'm like, hey, I'm running late. Is there any way you can go get counter? And luckily we have a good relationship like that, mm-hmm. that we can help each other out. And she's done the same thing with me,
mm-hmm.
but she doesn't have to do it as often because she does have her boyfriend Dalton.
Yeah.
And so, but yeah, I mean, I couldn't imagine, like I get my kid, I have every couple of days off.
Yeah.
I don't know how being solo parent 24/7, how you do it. That's.
Yeah. It's interesting. And it's funny because a lot of widows will say like there's single parenting and there's solo parenting. And like you said, it's solo parenting. Yeah.
I'm single parenting.
Right.
You're
solo parenting. So, and it's interesting. I'm glad you said that because it is true. Like I'll be at events, even up here. And Scott's like, come on, stay, let's have, you know, and I'm like I want to stay. Week.
You're like, yeah,
exactly.
I'm like, oh, I get it. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm like, I'm paying a babysitter. Like every time I'm away from the home, every single moment, unless my kids are at school, I am paying somebody. Oh, yeah. Every moment.
$20 an hour.
$20 an hour. And that's even like
cheap.
Cheap.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I hope none of the babysitters are listening.
Jack the rates.
I got, I've got a great babysitter. Yeah. She's amazing. She's an ex-teacher for that, at the school that they went to. And the boys love her. Like there's times I'll pick the boys up. They're like, Dad, are you leaving? I'm like, no.
Yeah.
Well, we want Miss Megan to come and watch us. I'm like, well, no, I'm watching you too.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm like, no, Dad, leave. I'm like, we want Miss Megan. I'm like,
well, too bad.
Sorry.
Yeah. Deal with it.
Do you have $20 an hour?
Exactly.
You gotta
pay that bill? It's a lot.
It adds up.
And the other thing too is like holidays. This is not like a poor me thing, but like events, holidays, like we don't get invited to stuff. Like events we used to go to, family barbecue, like we don't get invited to that stuff anymore.
Really?
I don't know. Just families all do, you know, like my neighbor, we have some neighbors across the street. They'll invite us to stuff, which is great. And then my girlfriend, Joanna. But other than that, not really. And so it's interesting because, you know, Kyle and I aren't a couple anymore. Like I definitely don't get invited to things, which is fine. But
by like his friends, like
just in general, anything with a couple, right? Anything with a couple or a family.
No.
Yeah. So that's interesting. And that's common.
That is weird.
Yeah.
I wouldn't think. Yeah. Huh. And I've had friends choose sides.
Yeah.
You know, and I personally don't think that's right either.
Right.
I'm like, you were friends with both of us. We're just not together anymore. You can still be friends. I'm not asking you to choose a side.
Totally.
But yeah, no, I've seen that. I haven't had anything where I haven't been invited to.
Yeah.
So.
I don't know.
That's unfortunate. That's unfortunate.
Yeah, that makes me
stopped.
Sad. Yeah.
Oh, it's okay. Like I said, Joanna invites us to her stuff. Yeah. And my parents come up. So, and actually my sister-in-law, Kyle's brother's wife and niece are coming next weekend.
So are you still close with his family? I would imagine.
Parts of his family, yes. Yeah. 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 That his brother and his brother's wife and there with those kids stay in contact with us pretty regularly. So
what about his parents?
That's good. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
Yeah. They're like in their 80s, still in Montana and dealing with their own, you know, health stuff.
Gotcha.
Sure.
Yeah. So Yeah.
Okay.
Well, Kira, this has been amazing having you in here, hearing your story. It's inspirational. I thank you so much for your time today.
Yeah. Thank you for having me on.
Anything else you want to talk about before we let you go?
No, just don't ever take any day for granted. Okay. Live life today. Because you just never know.
Well, we like to end the show with one last little game, one last question, catch the surprise. It's called the Tombstone Game.
Okay.
Here lies. Nervous. Here lies Kira. What's it say on your tombstone?
Wow. No, it doesn't say wow. That's my reaction. wow. Oh my goodness. What does it say on my tombstone? Jeez. If that's not triggering. Let me think about that. Golly, I don't know, you guys. What are you gonna have in your tombstones?
We've been asked that before.
Yeah, we actually, the first time was
when we had my wife and his ex-wife in here
a couple weeks ago.
You guys tell us what's on yours, and I'm like, oh fuck, no one's ever asked us. No one's ever thrown it back at us before.
Yeah, loyal friend, husband, partner. And someone that could always be counted on.
What did I say? Because it might have changed by now.
Murph, we need you.
Yeah, Murph, pull it back up. loyal, hardworking, was always there when you needed him.
Mm-hmm.
Beloved father and husband.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, wow. I guess, hopefully, wife, mother, loving, caring, positive. I don't know. That's a hard one, you guys.
Think about it and get back to it.
Yeah, that's another one I'll get back to.
Or next time we have you on, you'll come a little more prepared.
For sure. Yeah, I'll know. So, for sure.
No, you won't be caught by surprise.
Yeah.
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 Well, thank you so much again.
Yes, of course. Really great. Thank you for having me on.
Absolutely.
Appreciate it.
Well, thank you guys so much for tuning into the show. Please click that subscribe button if you haven't already. That would help us out a ton. Click that like button as well. Comment what you thought below. And we will see you next time.